This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is Sherwin Bitsui. He is here from Montana, and he's going to say hello with an opening poem.
My name is Sherwin Bitsui, and I'm originally from the Navajo Reservation, and I'm of the Bimpitotni, Todachitni, Bitter Water people, and I'm born for the many goats. I'm going to start with a poem from Flood Song, which is a larger extended poem, but this little section begins Flood Song, and it's a poem written to express water in Navajo. It is here they scoop granite stones from your chest. Snap each rib shut over the highway leading south. Comb your hair over pine smoke, dreaming of the ship that carried their shackles here. Their blue squeal, rectilinear in pre-dawn air, blows northward, followed by a fog of galloping horses. It is here they shake down branches to lift the veil, so the water of our clans may keep from gushing out and leave in its muddied path strips of grief swelling luminous between the chest, its plate bone, and the dimming atlases of our lungs. There is no sign of a trail leading out, only a pond of mule blood at the basin of the dam resting between us. Together we climb the song's hair, step onto the plank, and hear birth cries erupt into a bridge of starlight, connecting the ink-soaked shores of our nameless bodies to anchors of swans coughing dune sand onto a dry riverbed. Lifting the cloth to smear the reed invisible, I notice spiders emerging where our hair slipped out and leap by firelight into the raft scribbled on pond water, its translucent oars chiming metallic as it sinks below sea level. The aching inserted sideways underneath the linoleum floor begins to sound less like weeping and more like the cawing of crows gathering, thirsty, fat-bellied, outside the keyhole, for whom we have become bodies for the first time, for whom our language stabs the fork with a spoon.
Sherwin Bitsui at the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri. I am absolutely stunned by what I hear. This is from Flood Song.
Yes.
Copper Canyon Press. It is a book-length poem. And it is of the earth, of the land. I say to myself, I know I love poetry, but at this moment, I know why I love poetry. I want to tell them who you are. Sherwin Bitsui is from the Navajo Reservation in White Cone, Arizona, and you are a graduate of the Institute of American Indian Arts Creative Writing Program, at which now you teach in Santa Fe. And you are the author of poetry collections Shape Shift and Flood Song, and a new manuscript, which is entitled Dissolve.
Yes, Dissolve.
You have received the Whiting Writers Award, a grant from Witter Binner, the Truman Capote Creative Writing Fellowship and a Lannan Literary Fellowship. And you write of mythology, culture, history, and the Native American experience. What does it mean to be a member of the Navajo?
It means being human. It means having family. It means having a language and a perspective and a history that is long and continuous.
And you are making that permanent. That's your job. That's your job in your poetry.
I'm illuminating its permanence.
Please continue. Please continue reading to us.
Thank you.
Sherwin Bitsui at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and I'm in love.
Oh. I carve this apple into a dove, wrap it in a nest of boiling water. I pinch your silences into soft whispers, pile them on your stilled chests, the marrows of turtles swirling counterclockwise inside them. I offer a dry stem, unfold this paper crane into a square cage. I keep the butcher's thumbprints here.
We're hearing sections and fragments of a book-length poem, and I would say that on each page is maybe 10 lines. They're small pieces of a larger scheme. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing put together says what?
I think the whole thing put together emits a consistent tone. And I'm always wondering what it says. But I think it's saying a lot of things all at once.
It has many layers.
Yeah, it's layered.
Yes, and I love the surreality of it, mm-hmm. and the mythology. There is so much going on that I think people need to get the book to read it. But right now, let's hear more. Yeah.
In a stadium of afterglow, I parcel ounces of my body for each acre grazed, spear my hands with my sharpened knees to keep some kernel of this trail my own, some piece of the idea of now before it becomes was. And so this is, those are fragments from Flood Song, which is a larger collection that Copper Canyon published in 2009. And lately I've moved on to new work, and I'll read some pieces from Dissolve. I feel like my work comes from the space that I emerged from, and I speak of my life and my perspective and my perception of the reality that I have inherited as an Indigenous person. And I'm trying to find a way to speak about it, about all of those experiences, honestly and with some kind of integrity. And poetry is able to give me the ambiguity also that I need to speak truthfully about this
subject. But as a person, how do you remain in a dream state? What were you like as a little boy?
I was always imagining everything. I mean, I grew up out in the rural country of the reservation. I mean, I was a shepherd as a kid. I herded sheep from my grandparents. And I just daydreamed all the time.
And how did you know that words were your saviors? How did it come to words? I mean, it could have gone to music. It could have stayed in your mind. What happened to you that took this sensitive, beautiful person looking around at a landscape, at sheep, at the natural world, and knew how to change it from a daytime mind to a nighttime mind? How did all that happen?
I wish I knew. I wish I could say, I think, okay, so maybe if there were some apparatuses, an apparatus that could allow that to happen, it would be the fact that I'm also a speaker of my language, and that I have to move between my language and English constantly. And that porousness between perspective and vision allows me to move between and be between all of those spaces. And it's a singular space, so they're not necessarily separate, and I just anchor into my place.
I see. So language was very important to you to find out really who you were between these cultures.
Language is who I am.
Yes. Well, are many people left speaking Navajo?
We still have a large population of speakers.
This is important. I mean, are the children taught Navajo?
There are immersion programs, I believe. Yeah.
It's But
English is very
predominant.
Seductive
is a very good word, yes. And so is your work, actually. And so are we going to hear from Dissolve now?
Yeah.
And the theme from Dissolve remains the same as your soul song about the land and the culture?
I think Dissolve is my most personal work, but it's also a journey. And I'm confronted with the notion of linguicide, the reality of climate change, and trying to find a new language for this moment in time. So I'm interested in the notion of dissolving language as well. And I don't know if that's going to happen in the work, but I feel like everything is unhinged in this work. So there's the fragments are a little bit more intense.
What gives you the confidence to do that, to know that this is the right thing to do, to know that people will interpret it as you wish? What is there in you that is so sure that you should say this?
History. I think it's just the fact of my presence right here in 2017 as a Native person. I'm alive.
And do you think enough people will hear this?
I feel
it's so important.
I hope that, you know, I mean, I'd be happy if anybody could hear this, but I feel like this is also a very personal journey, and I am making myself... I'm renewing my thoughts and making myself anew with my work.
Which, if you could teach your students that vulnerability, you will have done a great service to humankind.
I love that. Thank you for that. I
please.
Mean, for all of us in
please,
the world, we need some vulnerability.
Let us have more
of
your luscious, beautiful language.
Thank you.
His name is Sherwin Bitsui. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress.
So this is from the new manuscript, Dissolve, and I'll just read from a section of it. This mountain stands near us, mountaining. It mistakes morning with morning when we wear slippers of steam to erase our carbon footprint. Wind's fingers wearing yours, you abandon the arbor still dripping from its entrance, buried in blurs. You unravel a plow of harvested light. Notice its embers when scrubbed on drowned faces. Repel fossilized wind. The mind's wind unlaces hammering over pixelated heel bones clasped to the nerve endings of my fingers' ghosts. These hands locked in a hive of red ants, swan through children grunting at the bank of one language while the other tethers moonlight to firelight. Their dark flitting unthreads this land from deveined searchlights groping for embers in irises that blur while blinking. How the map must look when black water is ladled from white water. When it is your face that ripples silver, not mule deer skipping across the creeks forgetting. How it might be then to look through silicone eyes, see a worm's spigot maw dangling atop the periphery of an axe blade's slumber.
Moonlight to firelight. Moonlight to firelight. Where do you get your imagery?
They appear in my, during the process of writing these pieces. I follow the images, I follow the poem, and they guide me towards.
So you start with language and it come and it leads you to your heart? Or are you, do you get into a space where you literally trust whatever bubbles forth?
I think language leads me to the deep song that
We all sing.
That we all have, yes.
And that's why we can understand you.
Mm.
Yes. Why do you say this is the most personal of your work? Because to me, it has the same overtones and the same broad view of the land and your connection to it.
Mm.
Why is it more a more personal journey than Flood Song?
Maybe I misspoke, and maybe they're all equally personal.
They're all you.
Yeah, they are all me.
They all come from the same place.
It's probably because it's very fresh, and it feels like this new work feels closest to me at this point in my life, and it feels personal and deeply personal on that level, and it feels truthful in a way that a lot of my, you know, I think every poet's first collection will be very different. I mean, they'll recognize their themselves in it, but they'll recognize that it's a younger version of who they were. And
do you think so?
I feel that way. I mean, my first book definitely. When I read it, I feel there's the poet myself, me, is very young in that experience and has just left the reservation. And has moved away, and then I feel like Flood Song. I was living in Tucson at the moment, and I definitely feel the landscape in that work. And with this new work, I feel very present in my body and my mind and
also,
my time.
Of course, practice makes perfect. I mean, you've been writing now. It was 2000 and what that Flood Song came out.
2009
and 9. So you were writing it before then. So you've been writing for years and years.
I've been writing for almost 20 years now.
Yes, and I bet you were writing in your mind as a little boy with those sheep. I can just see you.
I was probably writing some interesting things when I was out in the land, but
out in the land.
Yeah.
So you came from Arizona,
Northern Arizona,
and then you are now in Montana.
I am now teaching in a visiting professor at the University of Montana's creative writing program.
And then you go to Santa Fe.
Yeah, I also teach at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I teach for the creative writing MFA Law Residency Program.
And must a person be indigenous to attend that institute?
No, it's open to everybody. Anybody who is interested in getting an MFA in creative writing is definitely encouraged to apply.
And what are you seeing with your students? What can we hope for?
I teach many, many students from different backgrounds. And each of them, I think, because of my presence and perspective and my my book list that I require them to read. I think I give them a broader, I give them a spectrum of works, I think, that maybe.
Name one of the books you are requiring them to read.
This semester I'm teaching in a native poetics class, and I definitely use works from Layli Long Soldier's Whereas is on my list. Alison Hitchcock's work is also on my list. So I use a number of different Native poets.
Widening the world, widening the world. Yes, you are. Mm-hmm. And he is Sherwin Bitsui. He's our guest today. He's visiting from Montana at the moment, but he seems to be a person of the world. And we're going to hear some more of his work. I'm Grace Cavalieri at the Library of Congress. Is it finished? Dissolve? Is it finished?
It feels close to, yeah, it feels finished.
Is each page representative of one day's work?
No.
Because I'm wondering how you have three lines on one page and then another page has 20 lines.
I tell my students that I revise. I've been revising this work for maybe 8 years now. I mean, it's a little bit of an obsession to say the least.
A little bit of an obsession. What do you see that needs changing?
I have to break up. I don't know. I have to feel that it resonates something. It generates a tone, and that tone feels truthful to me. And I it's a book length work, so it's an orchestration. So I'm listening to the end of the poem as I'm thinking of the first part of the poem. So I'm always trying to find this balance. And I needed the composition to reach some sort of.
Yeah, how do you make a composition? It's an orchestration, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you begin a poem, and you have each poem then not only has the problem of sitting next to the other poem on either side of it, mm-hmm. but it has to speak to the journey, and it has to add to the arc, and then it has to be unified in some way.
Yes.
And then we have to have symmetry, mm-hmm. and we have to have beauty. Mm-hmm.
And an experience.
And so when you finish the book, what do you know?
I feel that the book gives you an experience, and I'm interested I love to read my work aloud, and I love to share my work publicly. So I feel like I'm writing for that, for the space of the reading of it. And I do come from an oral tradition, so
that's right.
That's also a part of my aesthetic. So yeah, I'm really trying to transform a reading space, and I write for that particular event.
So you believe as you're writing, it's almost audible.
Yes.
In your mind.
Yes.
Well, let's hear some more.
Thank you. This is a little section from Dissolve again. Mother threw a platter of blind spots on her son. Without knowing that bees ached in her feet. The beads of her breath sank into his chest. He kept them 5 long years. A tassel of singed hair cinched around his wrists. Key latches soothing songbirds in his pockets of fire. He stains the night's rim with sprigs of dry air, exiting fevering bodies cupped briefly by their itching.
Please continue.
She daubs clear his brow, remembers syringes filled with lake mess, wonders if it was him who strung teeth marks across her wrist the night before. Together they pace the ravine's gauge nearing empty, step upon a pale horse lying on the earth's heat, its legs upright in the cattle guard, butcher paper stretched taut over its wiry ribs. Its gasping sent them barreling back toward the awakened cornfield. Somewhere between, they leapt back into their bodies. They didn't recognize their own voices. Her apparition ferries the flowers of the bruises back to the severing. The bullwhip's knotted eye turns toward her and only her. When the fences come to suckle, where will her mind's legs carry her? Her departure alights them with memory, moths mill about her feet's sleeping fountains. Her throat's cave claims each sun's song, wears them like tiger's legs across nights striped and fanged. How they stretch between moon and helium, how they weave tuned and plucked out of the sea's gassed maw. How they uncover with clear hands a handful of hushed hours held like silver coins where their eyes fail to shut for the third time.
Do you believe that that poem is a resolution of sorts?
I think in the journey of this book, in all of my books, there are horses, and I, you know, we are a family who has horses, and my father's a cowboy, all my life we've always had horses, and I grew up on, you know, I rode horses a lot when I was a kid, and I think throughout all of my books, the horses have been running through. I think in Flood Song, they run through the coal mines, and they are a fog of galloping horses.
And they are a symbol, and a symbol.
They are a symbol, but in this particular book, the horse becomes papery, and it becomes another kind of animal.
Sherwin Bitsui, I'm going to watch your career with great passion, because I believe in you so much.
Oh, thank
and
you.
We have to conclude the program, but we have heard the voice of Sherwin Bitsui. The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. It was made possible by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation, and also Friends of Poetry, Allison Hedgecoke, Hiram LaRue, and Candace Katz, and Aviday Shoshani. Our engineer is Jay Kinlock. I'm Grace Cavalieri.